Yo, 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 everybody, what's going on? Welcome to episode 19 of Value Town. I'm your host, Jamie MV. And joining me, as always, is my co-host each and every week, Trump. What's going on, buddy?
Hello.
As you can tell, Crip's not here today, guys. He's got duties in Berlin, so he'll be back next week. But I figured since Crip's not here, we'd try to sneak in a constructed episode of Value Town, and what better way to do that than with our friend and our Liquid Value brother, Strife Crow. What's up, Strife?
Hey, what's up?
Excited to get a chance to talk about meta and stuff with you, man, since you seem to always have a deck that's current in meta or defining meta.
Well, excited to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. But any big news this week for you guys? I know, Trump, you've been playing in a lot of those King of the Hills this week, and doing pretty well, at least the first one with Artosis, and last night was a pretty good one. Don't want to put spoilers for anybody if they didn't see it. But how's that been?
Yeah, I agree. Those are fun. I think both ones... I think the second one was actually more exciting than the first one. Mm-hmm. And, the one that's actually released this week, I've been doing a pretty ambitious project, which is to try to get Legendary with a new account from last week.
I thought you had it last night, man. I was like watching. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, he's gonna do it tonight. He's gonna do it tonight.
But that's right, rank one.
Yeah, I'm at rank one. hoping to hit it today.
Yeah, I think you should. You definitely should. But we're gonna definitely talk about that deck. That's one of the things we're gonna be doing today. So we'll start off by talking about current meta, just these guys' thoughts on it, and myself, and then we'll follow it up into talking about some of Strife's decks that he's playing right now, and then Trump's mage decks, both the budget one and the non-budget one. So let's talk about meta. What do you guys think of Season 3? Kind of started off, it's almost been a month, it's been about 3 weeks now, and the season started off really, really jumping off with, I would say, like Kalento's Miracle Rogue, and then carry over from the Druid, Strife's Druid, And then Murloc started to emerge. Are you guys seeing anything different in the recent meta? Any kind of cool findings?
Well, I think the game is, even though there's still some problems that people have, especially with like say Nat Pagel or Kinkmaster, I think the game is better than it ever has been. Like it constructed right now is like it's really diverse and it has a pretty healthy meta game where it's really like nothing is too dominant, and you just pretty much have almost every class show up, even at the highest parts of ladder and even in tournaments. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just a lot of different decks. It's not really dominated by anything, I feel.
Trump, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. By the way, Strefko, you're playing on North America primarily, right?
Yeah, well, I don't have a Europe account.
All right, so I've had the interesting experience of playing on Europe and hitting a lot of the legendary players as well as just like high-ranked players, and I agree, it's really diverse. There have been quite a few surprises for me, ranging from like super paladin aggro to hunter control to there's a bunch of interesting things out there right now. And I'd go as far as to say, I agree with Strife Crow, like all the classes are pretty well represented, with maybe the notable exception of Priest. And I am giving the Mage the Trump bump.
That's right. That's right. It's funny because everybody, everybody watched Fight Night and watching Crip and Artosis talk about your Mage. And they're calling it weird and everything. I don't know. A lot of it seems to make sense. I can't wait till we talk about it just a little bit later on in this episode. And obviously you're proving that you can have a lot of success with it. But laddering up, Trump, especially recently, you've been able to kind of go through just the ranges, like in the ranking, just the non-legendary rankings. Where do you see like the cutoff? Like where do you see trends of like crazy, crazy aggro? Because that tends to happen like when you're laddering up. And then where it just kind of stops and then you start seeing more, I don't know, more control or more of what you would see in Legend.
It's everywhere. You're going to face aggro everywhere from rank 25 to legend. The aggro decks get sharper and more fearsome, and they go for the face more often as they should than trade for your minions. Or they basically play the aggro deck more correctly as you rank up. Mm-hmm. And You do see slightly more control in the upper levels just because it's tough to play control in the lower levels, I guess.
Because of just the crazy crazy presence of aggro?
It's more of a... It's hard like to play it correctly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's nothing. I mean, it's easier to play control if you're as good as you are in a lower ranking. It wouldn't be harder, you know. It's right. Just because it's a little bit harder to play the deck.
I see.
The aggro decks get sharper as you move up too, so there's no way it's harder to survive in the lower brackets as control.
So how often do you see priests? Because you know, you guys brought up priest a little bit, or Trump, you brought up priest, and I think it's kind of accepted as being one of the weaker classes right now, and even though it's fairly balanced, just everything. Do you see a lot of priests in Legend, Strife, and maybe ranking up, Trump?
No. I haven't seen one in a while. When I said it was relatively balanced, I mean, like before, you know, it was literally maybe one or two classes. At least now it's like five or six, maybe seven. It's not like everything. I haven't seen priest in a long time.
Trump, how about you?
I have seen priest, and I think it's a class that I'm not going to judge as bad yet. I just think it's underrepresented. Of course it's underrepresented.
Yeah.
I think you can build a good priest deck. I think you can rank up the legend with it. And people have done it. It just seems to not be very popular.
Yeah, I've been actually playing some priest. I haven't played a ton this season, but I've been trying to only play priest and rogue this season, and kind of taking the approach where I just try everything, whether it's good or bad, just to really, really understand the class. And yeah, it's pretty difficult, but I do have to say, I think inner fire is actually a bit underrated. I think it's always been used for like combo wombo type of things, but I've been finding it working out pretty well, especially with Pagel, you know, so prevalent, and obviously the cleric is good for inner rage, but it seems to be, I think, a decent utility card that has pretty good value too. I don't know, what do you guys think of inner fire?
Well, I would argue that inner fire on cleric is a very weak use of one mana card. I mean, people generally don't even use Blessing of Might, which is one mana for three power, and on the cleric it's only two attack for one mana, one card, which is, I mean, Cold Blood is plus four attack with the combo, and even without the combo it's plus two attack, so
it's good.
You know, even on a Nat Pagel, it's when you get a plus four, it's only as strong as a comboed Cold Blood, which is pretty strong, but it's not like so amazing that it's a good card because of the fact that you can only really use Inner Fire on stuff that has more toughness than power to begin with, and by quite a bit before it's effective. I'd say if you get like four, like, you know, something like a 1/5 or 0/4, it's like decent. If obviously you get anything more than that, like a 0/5, it starts being good, but I mean, how often are you really getting five attack from a Inner Fire, you know?
Trump, thoughts?
Yeah, I was actually going to, I wanted to interrupt Strife Crow, but I'm too polite for that. when he said, I haven't seen a lot of Blessing of Might, I've actually seen a lot of Blessing of Might.
I've seen a ton of Blessing of Might, too.
I don't know if that's a EU-specific thing, but I've run into a lot of aggro paladin, which is also a bit of a surprise, but okay. Let's see.
The truck deck is good. I mean, it's one of the decent
the aggro Divine Favor one, right?
Divine Favor and everything you would think of, basically. It's not like old six that kind of Divine Favor type of thing or miniatures. It's a little different with a lot more Blessing of Might and it's got the swords. What else? What are some other things it's got? It's got
it also seems to vary a lot. Like it can have Get Down. It can have Redemption. It might not have it.
Yeah,
there's diversity in that as well.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? Oh, Inner Fire.
Inner Fire, what you think?
The card sucks. The problem is, actually, I've seen some aggro priests as well. That was really interesting. And maybe in an aggro... the problem is, if you're playing an aggro priest and you're using Inner Fire to buff Nat Pagel, you're probably doing it wrong because aggro doesn't like to run Nat Pagel. And Inner Fire to debuff your opponents is also sort of weak. it's an interesting utility card, and I think it's fairly costed. And maybe, I mean, it's more appropriate for the Divine Spirit Wombo combo, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely for that. I just thought it was kind of interesting that you could, you know, because a priest with a lot of the cards are really strong against aggro, you know, with like cleric, especially turns one and two. They have a lot of answers, right, for aggro. And having the ability to kind of transition some of those cards into mid game, you know, making them like a 4/4 or 5/5 in some cases with Power Word Shield is kind of interesting. And then it actually works well with like Ysera too. But I just thought that, you know, people don't talk about it much, but you guys obviously still think it's bad, so I think it's kind of interesting. Let's see. What do you guys think of the Murloc decks these days? Because I've been seeing some more taunt, like Argus in Murloc of all things. Like, what's going on there?
I think their Murloc decks are getting more refined now. People used to just build Murloc as like a complete like bum rush deck, but I mean, it's still kind of like that. But I think that using too many cards like Power Whelming in Murloc isn't actually that great, because like kind of like the way Murlocs work is if you can kind of stick them on the battlefield, then, you know, they get progressively stronger and stronger. Mm-hmm. Like they all buff each other and they have a lot of synergy. So, you know, if you can kind of have cards that you can keep them alive with, like more going towards board control instead of just, you know, instead of just burst and face damage, then your Murlocs, basically having a higher chance of your Murlocs like sticking around is really beneficial. I guess Argus is kind of like that, buffing up the Murlocs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Trump, thoughts?
Yeah, Murloc decks are prevalent in every rank, 25 to Legend, and
yeah, I mean,
there are a lot of different ways to play them.
Yeah, I think the aggressive one, we've seen the aggressive ones just lots, especially this season. But yeah, just the more board control-ish type, I was really surprised about recently. And some really good players have gotten really high with them too. So it's really high.
I believe Shadowflame is making a comeback for Murloc. Yeah. I've seen people use Shadowflame now on Murlocs. Because it's pretty good board control. Like, if you do have board control, you can... It becomes pretty efficient, I guess, depending on how big your creatures are.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, like you said, there's just so much synergy between them. I think there's probably more synergy between that type of card than any other card in the game, right? I mean,
category of cards. Each other ridiculous
So, yeah, we should be seeing some more Murlocs in the near future. I don't know what they can really do about it either. It's probably the best aggro deck right now, would you say? What do you think?
Yeah, maybe. It's either that or Hunter. It's pretty close.
Really? You still think Hunter is?
It's hard to say if a deck is quote-unquote best. I'd say there's like a strong first-way tie between Paladin aggro, Warlock aggro, Hunter aggro, some other aggros. Like, there's the Murloc aggro, and then there's even just Warlock aggro without the Murlocs.
Yeah. That's not as strong, though. I mean, the times I've faced it.
It's strong against different things, because the aggro without the Murlocs is less vulnerable to, like, big area of effect clears and or just being able to stay up, because the Murlocs are individually weak, but together they are strong. Whereas if you just have basic cards such as Harvest Golem, which Murlocs don't always run, but some of the aggro Warlocks without Murlocs run it, then they're more sturdy.
Okay.
Yeah, and it also, a lot of decks are designed to, like, remove creatures as they come on, like come up with like a lot of spells. Murlocs are kind of weak to that because, you know, they kind of need to build up. If they just have too much like single target removal for every, for example, like War Axe could ruin your day, stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. So control decks, prevalent on the ladder right now. Are there any new ones that you've seen? Trump, start with Trump.
Yeah, the big new one is the Mage Control deck.
Yes! Who came up with that one?
I'll take some credit for that one. It's pretty generally good because it's got a lot of efficient removal. It's got the big one, the Flame Strike. Yep. And Water Elemental is really good, as it turns out.
Yeah.
I think everybody's known it's been really good, but it's been always the enigma why it wasn't played very much in Constructed. All right, so Mage, Strife Grow, any other control decks you've seen that have been interesting?
I mean, like you said, like all the classes are played, and all the classes like have like a control deck pretty much. Like even so, you know, like you've seen Hunter control.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's only really X amount of classes. I think it's 10. And when you do build your class towards a control deck, they're generally all similar concepts. You know what I mean? It's not like one particular Druid control deck is very different than another. It's more like you just have to make up your mind that you are playing control deck. You know what I mean? Like, say, Dan Shaman or whatever. So, for Priest. So, it's like, there's not, like, there can only really be 10 control decks if there's 10 classes. Like, it's just how to build it the best, you know? So.
Man, that is the most general answer I've ever heard.
So, I don't know how to answer it. Because, these decks have been around forever, and they're just, like, the control deck of each class, you know? So there's even, you know, Warlock control, which is Giants, you know, Druid control, these like Ysiras and Sonarises, Ragnaroses. I mean, just like basically big creatures.
Trump, you were going to say something?
Yeah, Strife's right. You can basically build a control deck for any of the 9 classes, and you just have a bunch of... It's incredible!
It's incredible.
Big creatures. Big creatures.
The game is incredible. You can do that. But okay, it's definitely true. I would think that some classes are just a little bit more diverse. I mean, can be more diverse just with their powers, that sort of thing. But it is pretty darn close. I think most of the control.
I'm not saying it's good for every class. I'm saying it's like relatively doable.
I wouldn't even say it's relatively doable. I'd say it is completely doable with any class.
Yeah, exactly. I've almost never seen a rogue control class deck, though.
Yeah, that's actually one that's very hard to do.
It depends how you want to define a control deck, but I mean, I have seen some rogue decks with Ragnaros, but I think they're fairly aggro as well.
Yeah, I'd actually qualify the Miracle Rogue deck as control, but that may be a misqualification.
Oh, wow.
It's in that
category.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think everybody generally thinks of it as a combo deck, right? But it definitely has a lot of control elements in the beginning.
Because usually it's not using creatures. It's more like trying to use spells to remove the other guy's creatures. Then eventually, you know, combo out, I guess.
The style is control for sure, but the cards themselves are, I mean, there's not very many big cards in that, right? There's Edwin and Leroy, and that's about it, right?
Right, but all of its time to like control your minions and try to remove them from the board.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. I never thought about it like that. It's cool. All right, and kind of following up, we kind of gone aggro and control, kind of that mid-tempo type of deck that actually Strife you made popular with the Druid, with a lot of the, you know, just the Druid everybody knows. What do you think of that style right now? Because I feel like the Shaman is closer to the current Shaman too, or the popular Shamans right now are a little bit closer to that type of deck. Do you agree?
Yeah, the Shamans are kind of progressing into more and more mid-range as well, I think, because... Shaman, for one, the problem with Shaman, or one of the problems with Shaman, is there's not really any way to heal. So if the decks are just, you know, straight to your face all the time, you're pretty much gonna die at around, you know, turns 8 to 10. Like, I've almost never played a Shaman versus, like, let's say Aggro Hunter, that, you know, the face smashing Hunter, where I've never really survived to, like, turn 11 or something. It's, like, almost, just pretty much never. Like, you just, no matter how the game turns out, you just always die around turn 10, you know? It's either you have to kill them before then or you lose. And that's kind of the reason why I think Shamans have been progressing more towards mid-range, because if you do go control Shaman, you're still going to die around turn 10. and the slower you're, it doesn't matter if you really build up incremental card advantage. It doesn't matter if you're just dead, right? At turn 10, just steady shot.
Right.
So, that's why. And shamans they don't really do early damage. Like, they spend their whole early game kind of setting up their board. Like, they try to remove your creatures with efficient removal. Like, shamans have so many one mana removal, rock, biter, lightning bolt, although bolt isn't exactly one mana, but, you know, and even the Stormforged Axe, and anytime they get kind of free mana, they just kind of spam out totems is their style. It's really like throughout like the mid game, like around turn 5 to 6, like if you don't have them under control, you can get run over by the shaman in like one or two turns,
right?
Because like Fire Elemental in turn 6 can just be like one of the biggest swings in the game, just based on the strength of the card. Like, if they already have a little bit lead before then from like totems, say, and then you drop like a creature that just gets Fire Elemental, then you're like dropping stuff into totems and a Fire Elemental. In the Fire Elemental, like if they have stuff like Rockbiter and Wind Fury, like one Rockbiter, one Wind Fury, and a Fire Elemental is 18 damage already, so you're almost dead. So
yeah, it's pretty nice. No, definitely. Trump, thoughts on Shaman? Have you gotten a chance to play some?
I've played against a few. Actually, I've met a cool Bloodlust Shaman deck where you just get a lot of guys you do the Bloodlust. In fact, speaking of getting a lot of guys and then doing something, that Druid deck is also somewhat popular with the on you.
Yeah,
you get a lot of guys.
Yeah, it's strong.
Yeah, do the Violet Teacher. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw that game, by the way, Trump, that you played that Shaman. And hopefully other people saw it. It was actually really cool. Like, I learned a little bit just watching you play it. You skipping turns and stuff against it. It's kind of cool. But yeah, so Shaman in general, what do you think about? Do you think Overload is an issue against aggro?
Well, it just makes your cards cost more mana later. I mean, inherently, it's not a problem because the Overload cards are stronger the turn you play them. Like they're over budgeted for the cost. Like, you have to count the overload as part of the cost, so it shouldn't be a problem, you know, because you're having a weak turn next turn to some extent, but you're making it up by having a stronger turn on the current turn. So in fact, I'd argue it might even be better against the aggro, that kind of thing.
Oh really?
But,
okay.
I mean, it's pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah. The because reason I bring it up is just like turns 1 and 2. Generally, the minions aren't, you know, they have very few hit points, right? And a lot of times, like say like Lightning Bolt. Or even Axe would agree, right? You would over hit on them, but
Well, if you think about Lightning Bolt as like a Frostbolt, you know, it's like some things aren't just not worth Frostbolting. Like, you're gonna have that problem with Frostbolt as well. I guess the real issue is that, you know, Shaman doesn't have a way to deal one damage with the hero power, like Mage and Druid and stuff, and Rogue. So stuff that does come out like Leper Gnomes, there's not really too many efficient ways to deal with it. I mean, there is Earth Shock, so I guess that's one reason why people do use two Earth Shocks on a lot of these.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't feel that great about Frostbolting a Leper Gnome either.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you just don't have to, I guess, with the Mage Hero power.
Chop, you agree with, I guess, those sentiments on Overload?
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of a weighted question because, like, is Overload a problem? Yes, it is, because you have to pay more mana the next turn, but that's just how
well,
the card
it was
is.
Mostly, yeah. Is it a problem against aggro in particular? Because
it's a problem against everything, since you always want to cast more stuff.
Okay. Fair. That's true. Okay, well, why don't we go into some of y'all's decks? You know, the decks that you guys are playing on the ladder. And
yeah, sure.
I figured we would switch over to... Let's start with Strife and check out, I guess, the Druid and the Shaman deck you're running. So let's switch over here. And we can talk about them. Okay. So I have the Shaman on the left and the Druid on the right. Let's talk about the Druid first, since I think a lot of people are pretty familiar with this deck, but I figured we'd just go over it since, again, like, you've been playing it and probably seen articles on it, but it's the Watcher version of this, right? Can you explain just, I guess, the difference? The Watchers are the main difference, so explain why the Watchers are a really important component to this.
Well, Basically, in this meta, you have to really respect Hunter a lot. Like, you've kind of seen, hopefully you've seen some of the ESGN games, but, you know, you really have to respect the class right now. Like, it's a class that's kind of warping the metagame, where you need to do something to respect it. And, you know, originally what I did to kind of respect it was just add in Sun Fury. But as you add in, you know, Sun Furies, and I also believe I had, like, one Defender of Argus, and pretty much every Druid is already using two Keepers, you know, which is another way to activate Watcher. So, like, as you add in all these things, you're already so close to being able to use Watchers, like, efficiently for free, you know what I mean? Since here you have two Sun Furies, one Argus, and maybe two Keepers. So, at that point, you might as well just add in, you know, the last Argus and the two Watchers, because if you do have ways to activate Watchers, nobody can deny that it's strong, because it's a 2-mana for a 4/5. The problem with Watchers, you need ways to activate it, you know. Another thing is, you can, like, since you already have to, like, respect Hunter so much, even the version with Sun Furies without Watchers, they need other ways to respect Hunter. And those other ways are stuff like Claw and the Earthen Ring Farseer. So if you do go ahead and add in Watchers, you can just, you know, take out the Claws and the Earthen Ring Farseers. So it's probably stronger against other stuff as well, because those cards aren't exactly great against most things. You know, they're kind of there to buffer your HP against Hunter. And if you have Watchers, then you're going to take less damage anyway, so you can go greedier on, you know, having less Claws and Earthen Ring Farseers.
Yeah, definitely cool things added, I guess, to what you were doing. Do you see any other things, or maybe some things that you're experimenting with to really enhance this? Because this deck is so refined at this point, in my opinion. I'm just wondering if there's more.
I had some big breakthroughs on like what I found was good. I mean, the deck I believe that's on the stream right now is the one I'm playing right now, but you know, that's after I've already found out. But one of the things that was really interesting to me was the fact that I don't think Blood Mage is good. I've always thought it was crazy not to use Blood Mage in these decks, but now I agree with some other people that it's not good. I mean, Blood Mage is incredibly good in Druid. Like, in the deck, Blood Mage is very good. The reason why you don't want to use Blood Mage is because it pretty much just conflicts too much on your mana curve. Because when you're using Watchers, you have already a ton of two drops, because you have two Sun Furies, two Watchers, and then you have the mandatory Nat Pagel in every deck. So that's already five. And I'm not sure if there's any more, but I think there's only five. But five is a lot of two drops already, especially as Innervate, where you don't even need as many two drops, because, you know, if you count Innervate as a two drop, technically a two drop, where, you know, you can push, like, some of your four drops as your two drops, that's like seven things you can do in turn two, even, you know, if you count the Innervate. So it's like, even though Blood Mage is good to combo later, say on turn six with Swipe or any time with Wrath, you're losing like half the benefit of the card, which is it being a two drop. And if you are trying to just go bigger, like higher mana, you'd kind of rather hit the real mana curve instead of relying on two small cards as a combo. It's not as reliable, and it's probably not as strong. Although Blood Mage Swipe is really strong.
So a Blood Mage replacement, I guess, is the addition.
Well, that's another thing. Like, that's why, like, I kind of like Cenarius and Rag, because if you are going to like late game, like turns 8 and 9 and stuff, where you can cast Cenarius and Ragnaros, they are quite a bit stronger than casting like 2-4 drops. It's just the fact that the 4 drops have more potential early. Like, if you think about something like a Chillwind Yeti and an Azure Drake, that's a pretty good way to compare it, right? Because a Chillwind Yeti and an Azure Drake is 2 cards, but since the Azure Drake is a cantrip, I believe it's costing you a net like 1 card, compared to like the Cenarius, which is 1 card. So, you know, you get a 4/5 and a 4/4, and I guess, you know, with spell power, and you use the same amount of cards as Cenarius for 9 mana, but Cenarius is a 5/8 and the 2 taunters, and I think that's a fair bit stronger. So, like, if you are actually making it up to the really high mana curves, I believe it's probably better to cast one of the big cards than multiple little cards, especially since, you know, if you're not even counting like the Azure Dream, you're just talking about two Yetis, that actually costs you one more card, you know, that because the nine top is only one card. So.
Trump, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite amazed at how much this Druid deck has progressed and been refined. There are quite a few, like, I really enjoyed that explanation of Blood Mage Thanos by Strifecrow because I am one of the old school thoughts that it is insane not to run the Blood Mage here. I think it's still a possibility. I mean, there's still little bits and pieces to me, like you could easily make this more anti-aggro, you could make this more anti-control. Right now it's a nice balance, which is
And Rack, like, one of the most important matches, because, like, Warrior Control is actually kind of making a comeback. Like, it's pretty popular now.
Mm-hmm.
And Ragnaros is, like, insanely good against Warrior Control. Just because, like, you're almost never going to kill them that fast. Just because of the sheer amount of, like, armoring up they do. You know, like, the shield block and their hero power.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you're just not going to kill them by turn 10. And if you're going to get that late, like, stuff like Ragnaros, the Cenarius is really good. Like, I've actually killed Alexstrasza's with Ragnaros's. Groms with Ragnaros's. That's like, you know, it's so efficient if you're killing something like that and then you're leaving behind an 8/8. It's a good burst as well. Like, even if they don't have a creature, you do 8 damage to the face, almost like a pyro blast for 8 mana, and they still have to kill the Ragnaros. So.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for a while, right, this deck, when you had Blood Mage in it, I think Cenarius and Rag were being kind of inter-switched. I think later on, I think Rag was there, and Cenarius wasn't.
Yeah, I kind of shifted like the like that stuff upward because, like, a part of the reason why you're running Blood Mage is because you're trying to keep your hand robust, you know, because it's a cantrip. Like, after you play it, maybe with a spell or just when it, like, just by itself, it dies and you draw another card. So it's really there to buffer your hand size, you know, keeping your hand big. But it's having just more, like, high mana cards does the same thing. That's kind of what I figured out. Just having more cards at high mana is, like, the same thing, and it's stronger once you kind of get there, you know.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't actually. That's actually a great explanation. I always wondered because I always thought that Cenarius seemed to be more in line with, I guess, the design of the mid range type of deck. You know, where you're just like, you got those solid mid range units, and they're going to be on the board for a while, just because you have the Yetis and you have those. The Ancient Lores, you know, Innervate, and that sort of thing. And Cenarius with the 2/2 buff seemed to be maybe in line with that. You know, not necessarily just the, you know, you have the option of having the And
I mean, the
so
main
form
of Cenarius, the main, you're still mostly casting the Treants.
Yeah,
it's a good like second option if you have the right situation.
Yeah.
Because it's actually fairly rare for you to have that many creatures and then buy like you know, turn 9 where you can actually get a good bloodlust, but like almost all the time I find when I do cast Cenarius is for the Treants. But you know, almost any time I have two creatures out, I'll choose the bloodlust instead because, well, I just call it a bloodlust, but it's like the buff. But
yeah.
it's because like the bloodlust effect has like haste, you know, like you get the four, like you get those two creatures can attack right away already. So
yeah.
Whereas the Treants, you know, they can't attack. I mean, obviously, sometimes you really want the taunt, so, like, versus aggro, so then
do the taunt. Yeah, aggro, actually.
Yeah.
All right, so, is there more innovation coming to it? I didn't quite catch it, because you talked about Blood Mage, and Blood Mage isn't...
Honestly, I haven't changed that deck in, like, 3 weeks.
Okay.
Like, the card for card, the exact same.
Okay.
So, I haven't been finding any ideas on how I could change it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's different Druid decks, like, but they're... Like, I think this one is really well refined already for, like, mid-range Watchers. Like, the other concepts are something like, if you want to go Power of the Wild, it's a whole other deck, you know. Or, like, a Druid Control deck, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
I mean,
as far as, like, this mid-range Watcher type, I think it's fairly close to as good as I can think to make it.
It's got to be one of the most... If not the most refined deck that we have in the metagame right now, because it's gone through iterations. It's gone through like 4 iterations, I think. So really, really cool. Really, really actually cool to see the process of it too. And having you explain it is amazing. Let's talk about the Shaman deck you got here. And Shaman, I feel like, is on the rise, you know, maybe even gotten to the top now, but it's definitely been had a huge influx this season in particular, and it's kind of been coming, in my opinion. I mean, the Shamans always had such versatile abilities with the cards, so I'm not surprised. But talk about this one.
Well, I mean, I talked about a little bit before, right, how, like, basically, I guess I originally, like, the first time I was kind of introduced to Shaman this patch was, like, Savage's Shaman, I guess. I don't know, maybe some doghouse version or whatever. Basically, it's the one that we all played, because we actually played that deck in Fight Night. You know, it aired yesterday, so it's not a spoiler, because I believe I played it yesterday, but I just copied their deck. You know, I mean, there's no way for us to make six decks in one day, so I just literally copied their deck on the second day. And
wait, were you guys sharing decks?
Well, no, you can see what their decks are after the game.
Oh, okay.
Because
you
can see them play it, right?
Oh, you mean like the second and third days? Yeah, okay, gotcha.
And then. Yeah, I talked about some of the weaknesses of the deck, but I thought that just having a lot of slow cards like Karn and stuff isn't that great, because you're always dying around turn 10 no matter what versus Hunter, and maybe even some other aggro decks that are just burning you out. Like, you have no healing, not like Druid. You're also kind of weak to Unleash the Hounds because the nature of the Shaman Hero ability, you're just making more totems. So you really have to adjust a lot to be able to beat hunters. Like, I mean, I guess you could just, you know, say, you know, forget it, I just lose a hunter, and I just maybe do extra good against other things. But I've never kind of liked that style, where I kind of like to make all my decks, like, playable against everything. And if it's not playable, or, like, relatively playable against everything, I don't really like it that much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you could have a better matchup against, let's say, Warrior or something, Warrior Control, if you do use Karn and stuff. But I kind of adjusted it to be more mid-range, where I could really, like, build up, you know, totems early game, and then maybe around turns 5 to 6 start really putting on the pressure.
Right.
And it's really bursty. Like, you can do 25 damage in one turn. So.
yeah, with the Wind Fury and
you just need the right cards. Yeah,
exactly.
But I've made, like, some changes throughout. Like, the Gadgetzan was a good change, like a good thing, just because Shaman's using so many one mana spells, I believe like 6 at this point, like Lightning Bolt, Rockbiter, and Earthshock. That's all 6, and so it's like in a lot of the matchups where you find that there's not a great target for those spells, like say Warrior Control, like they don't really have any creatures a lot of times, so all your Lightning Bolts are just and Rockbiter just sitting in your hand, and then if that does happen later on, and then you draw a Gadgetzan, or already had a Gadgetzan, you can just cycle them all on their face. You know?
Yeah. Trump, what do you think of this set? Any interesting things you see, or maybe things that you think would be maybe cool to add to it?
All right. Well, the simplest... I tend to lean towards the more greedy style side, so you would see me add the Karn into it. You would see me probably take out the Wind Fury, put in an Alakir, move in the curve a bit higher, but I don't disagree with Strikecrow's thoughts about the Shaman and how control, how long-term control might be on the weak side. Mm-hmm. So I lean towards Strife's judgment on this, and I'd have to try out other things. But I do think this Shaman deck can be... test out some more, maybe some cards would change.
Yeah, also this one is not refined. Like, if the Druid is refined, this one is not. Like, I do make changes quite a bit as I play Shaman, like, all the time, and trying stuff out. So this one is just, not refined at all.
Talk about the Argent Commanders.
Well, a lot of Shamans with Wind Fury, they're actually using Leeroy, but I found that with Leeroy, it kind of hurts the consistency of your deck a lot, because if they're not low enough, then you pretty much can't use Leeroy, like, unless you use it to last hit. And this is not exactly true. I mean, obviously you can use Leeroy for other things, but as a general thing, like, Leeroy isn't that great unless you're killing them the turn you cast it, you know, because it's leaving behind the whelps. There's some cool things you can do, maybe Leeroy Lightning Storm or something, but like, generally, like, you almost always see Leeroy being the final spell you cast. And if you're not actually getting them that low where like they have a decent early game where controlling your totems, killing your fire elementals, then you start running low on cards and your hand's like Leroy or something. It's kind of weird. I mean, to some extent, Wind Fury has the same problem, mm-hmm. but Wind Fury is... Well, one, Wind Fury... I took out Alakir for Wind Fury, so it kind of replaced that slot, like the big burst slot. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, that bad for that. But also, Wind Fury is actually cyclable with Gadgetzan, meaning, like, even if I'm not in kill range, if I have a Gadgetzan out and maybe, like, anything to Wind Fury, I'll just go ahead and Wind Fury, like, a 4-4, like, the Gadgetzan itself, if it survives, and then I'll just hit him for 8, and it still cycles it. So I think it's a lot. I think it's probably better than Leroy, because if you can only have one, like, you're not willing to go too gimmicky, then I think it's stronger because of the synergy with Rockbiter and Flame Tongue Totem. Mm-hmm. Like, you can actually Leroy anything. I mean, not Leroy, Wind Fury anything. Because if people are only trying to combo with Leroy, it's not like Fire Elemental is even smaller than Leroy. It's the same thing. It's 6 a pack. So any kind of burst you can get with Leroy, Rockbiter weapon, you can get with Fire Elemental Rockbiter weapon if it sticks around one turn, so...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the original question was Argent Commander, but
yes.
It's kind of like a... Like, I felt like the commanders were a more solid way to provide the burst in that kind of style. Because you're a mid-range deck, so you are trying to get in damage, like, around turns, you know, 4 to 6 and stuff. So I think Argent is just really solid. Like, I just never feel sad when I play Argent. Like, it always does what it's advertising, you know?
Right,
it just
right.
it always, like, kills, like, a 4-4, like, does 4 damage to something and then sticks around. And it actually does better than that if they don't have any creatures and you just punch them in the face, because then it doesn't even lose the divine shield, and then they have to, it's really hard to deal with it after. So
Trump, yeah, you felt like it looked like you wanted to maybe interject there. Did you have a
yeah, I mean, I like the Argent Commander in this deck. It's especially good because you run 2 Flame Tongue Totem and you also have the Wind Fury, so that makes the charging things naturally better.
You know, one thing that's missing that I know a lot of people either really feel strongly about or really like the card is Manatei Totem. Is that kind of interchangeable with NetPagel here, or do you just not like that card at all?
I think Manatei Totem is, I mean, NetPagel is just on a whole other level.
Yeah,
than Manatei Totem.
Amazing. So.
So, I mean, I have played in every iteration of Shaman I've played, like all these, I've never taken out NetPagel. Like, it's not on my list of like cards that, you know, you can try to refine, you know, whereas yeah. Manatide is, so that kind of tells you something about it. Like Manatide might be, say, like cards are like, you know, decks are 30 cards, you know, Manatide might be somewhere between like the 25th to like 40th best card in the deck. So, you know, depending on what you feel about the rankings and how you want to change the deck, it's like, sometimes you have it in, sometimes you don't, you know. But NetPagel is like on a whole other level. Like, it's just always not even close to being anywhere near the 30th card. So, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the reason why, I think, is because, like, people talk about counters to NetPagel a lot. And a lot of people, they never really mention, like, the way it's supposed to be countered. And that is just punching it with creatures, you know? Like, they're always talking about, like, you know, Wrath plus hero power or that kind of things. But anytime you're kind of nuking NetPagel with a spell, it's not going to be efficient at all, not even close, because NetPagel is extremely big for a 2-drop.
Yeah.
I'm talking about big as in the toughness, like 4, right? Like, you almost never have a 2-drop being 4 toughness where you're trying to kill it. And also, NetPagel, even if you're killing it immediately, 50% of the time it's already going to draw the card, so you're not going to be efficient no matter what, nuking NetPagel with spells like Swipe, Wrath and stuff like that. Really, the counter to Manatei Totem and NetPagel is creatures, because the creatures don't fight back. So, so that's the thing. But
that's
the reason
point.
Why the cards are on a whole nother level is because Manatei is 3 mana and NetPagel is 2. And usually, like in this kind of metagame, or you know, just in general in Hearthstone, it's really turn 2 where people start dropping a lot of creatures. So the reason why NetPagel is so imbalanced is because you generally never have any creatures when they drop NetPagel. So you know what I mean? Like, the number one, like, counter to NetPagel is non-existent because you don't have any...
It's NetPagel. It's your own NetPagel.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, if you... In a one-mana metagame, NetPagel was much less efficient, effective. Remember the old one-mana metagame with the Warlock Flame Imp and Mass One-Mana Draw? Right. I mean, that's why, because... You know, the number one counter to NetPagel is actually creatures. It's just in the two-mana metagame right now where most people don't have one drops, then NetPagel's just the first creature on board, and then you have to make a decision whether to try to kill it with creatures, which, you know, is really risky because, say, you'd then drop some 2-2, 3-2s like Sun Furies or like 3-2s, and then it doesn't have haste, so then they have a chance of drawing more. What if they you know, remove your creature that you drop? Like, they just kill you.
Yeah, it's the story of the meta right now, man. You summed it up really well.
You know, and your other option is trying to nuke that pig with spells, but again, that's never going to be effective. And in fact, whether that's even doable most of the time is pretty doubtful as well, because it's four toughness. So.
Right.
Oh, that's why it's, Manatide is not on the same level, because a lot of times there's already creatures on the battlefield when they drop Manatide since turn 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's also weaker. 3 toughness and stuff.
Sick explanation, Strife. That's good stuff right there, man. Hopefully you guys were able to absorb that. Any last thoughts on the Shaman deck, Trump? Anything?
That was really well said, Strife.
Yeah, that was sweet.
That said, I would be trying to find any reason to fit in one Manatide totem, just because I really like that card. It's really strong against control in particular. It's probably it's really bad against aggro though. So
yeah, it's ridiculously strong against control.
Mm-hmm.
Like, exactly. I've won so many games Shaman vs. Warrior completely due to one mana tied to them. Like, it just wins them. If they can't kill it, they lose extremely quick because it just takes over the game. So.
Yeah, Trump, finish your thought.
Sorry, and it has the same weakness, right? Like, if they don't have creatures, mana tied is the same. Like, it's even worse because they still have to nuke it with a spell, except it always draws, so you're not going to be efficient like Wrathing a Manatide either. It's really strong against Warrior control and stuff.
I agree with that.
Did you want to finish your thought? Let me think.
No, that's good.
Okay, great. All right, why don't we move on? Those were Strife's deck. Why don't we talk a little bit about Trump's decks now? And hold on, let me change this. And we'll switch over to the Mage decks. And kind of different formatted, these images. But the left one is the budget deck that Trump's been playing and trying to get to Legend. And then on the right one is not so much a budget deck. It's just generally a good Mage deck that he's been playing. And is this the exact same one you played on Fight Night, or is this a different one?
That one, if it has the Imani Berserkers, it's definitely different.
Yeah, it has Imani Berserkers.
Yep, it's different.
Okay, so why don't we talk about the budget one first, since you've been playing it on stream a lot. And for those that haven't read, I guess, the explanation of it, explain why it's a budget deck, given that it has an epic and a few rares in it.
Yeah, okay, so I'm still not seeing it on the stream, but I'll see it eventually. I know off the top of my head that it's under 1,000 dust to build this deck, which means that I created the account on Friday and have only been playing a week, and you naturally get just about that much dust. In fact, I have like a few hundred left over. Actually, I have over 400 left over. By naturally playing the game, you'll be able to build this deck. And that's even with me, like, crafting some things that I ended up not using, just due to as I leveled up and as I played more guys, it was, I refined it. Mm-hmm. So, some things that are going to look pretty weird, in fact, I only changed it yesterday, are the addition of 2 Arcane Explosion and the removal of the Arcane Missiles. And let's see... And of course, it doesn't have any legendaries in it. And only one.
No, 1,000 does. That's not very much. That's right. Definitely in the budget range for sure.
So the goal of the deck is pretty simple. It's a straightforward, efficient answer control deck. This is more of the control than it is a mid-range deck, I would say, and.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would argue that this is a good counter to the mid-range control decks because it would be even greedier and it has efficient answers. So your Imani Berserker can trade up for Yetis, and that's the dream of the Imani Berserker. The Arcane Explosion is there just to deal with the massive amounts of
aggro. Yeah, crazy aggro decks.
Yeah, like the Murlocs in particular, the Hunters. It's like a Flame Strike for the Hunters. It's a Flame Strike for the Murlocs, sort of. It's the Paladin aggro gets killed by it. It's incredible how good the Arcane Explosions are. Although, I have only tried them for one day, and I was very skeptical on how good they would be. I imagine, like, they would be even better with Blood Mage, to be honest. Let's see. And I even thought about running a Kobold Geomancer. The Earthen Ring Farseers are also added to counter aggro, and the Hunters, which there are a lot of.
Talk about the effectiveness of the Ogres, because, you know, a lot of people always associate Ogres as really, really good, like one of the top cards in Arena, or really just one of the best vanilla minions in Arena. And how is it working in Construct for you?
It was on Valuetown that I think I made the comment like a few weeks ago, like, oh, if you don't have Ragdos, just put Ogre in. Was it here? It was here, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
And then like Crypt laughed it off, and like everyone
of course
was like,
he did.
Oh, Ogre instead of Ragdos, okay. Well, as it turns out, the Ogre is pretty good. And it's comparable to Karen. Has +2/+2 on Karen. On Ragnos, comes out 2 mana earlier. Would I run Ragnos instead of Ogre? Probably. But it's a good replacement, and it's sufficient. It's one nice thing is against a lot of the Druid decks, which run Druid of the Claw, the Ogre one-shots the Druid of the Claw, and that's the Ogre dream, to kill it and then survive, and then maybe
the
get healed
dream.
By the Earthen Ring Farseer.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Ogre Smash. No, that's really good. There's not many things I can remove it, so remove the Druid of the Claw at 6. So
there have been a lot of games where I go like turn 3 Earthen Ring Farseer or Chillwind Yeti or Water Elemental Decoy, and then just have a 3/4/5/6 drop with the Ogre at the top, and if you get that curve off, then you're looking really good.
Okay, really cool. Hey, your cam's frozen.
Yep.
Let's restart real quick. I thought we were going to go one whole show without it freezing, but of course not. No, it looks really solid. I mean, I've seen you play it, too. It's, you know, you're going to get to Legend, hopefully today, actually. That'd be really, really cool to see you get there today. But talk about the Faceless a little bit. Like, why have that single Faceless there?
So speaking of Faceless, one thing that I would probably add into Strife Shaman deck is a Faceless Manipulator. It's good because you have the hard removal to go along with it. So you have the Polymorph, and in Shaman you have the Hex, and it's really nice to create mana get there guy, which will usually be like a Karen or a Ragnaros or Ysera or something amazing, and then you Hex it or you Polymorph it.
That's such a big swing.
Would you guys say, generally speaking, Faceless should only be used in that type of combo situation? Like when you have like a hard removal like that?
No,
because you can faceless your own guy also.
Let's say they drop a card and you're pretty happy just facelessing it, even without the hex.
Well, I mean, including it in your deck. Not so much the play. The play, of course, you know, is you can hex. Well, it was fine. Oh, your cam was fine there, Jeff.
But, oh, okay. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
The stream didn't catch up.
Yeah, would you say that including faceless in your deck would require having that kind of cheap, hard removal?
It's certainly helped out by it, and I noticed that the Druid deck stopped running Faceless. That's actually a possibility, too. And any deck has the hard removal with the Tink Master, really, so you go Faceless Tink Master.
Sure.
Yeah.
Faceless. Although that's really specific. Like in a Mage deck or a Shaman deck, you have at least two ways to do it with the Polymorph and like
Some of the most like excruciating turns I had was when I play Ragnaros and they go Faceless BGH.
Yeah,
those hurt so bad. And he gets that 4/2 on the board too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really, really painful. Okay, really cool. Yeah, and those of you, definitely just try this deck out again. It's very cheap, and I think essentially almost everybody can probably put this deck together that's played more than maybe a couple weeks or a few weeks are likely to be able to put this together.
If you want to ever play control style, you're going to have 2 Azure Drakes and 2 Sunfury Protectors anyways. They're just really good cards.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, talk about the non-budget deck. The right deck.
Alright, so the non-budget deck over there is basically the budget deck, except instead of the ogres, you put in Karn, you put in Karn, and you put in Sylvanas, and you put in Ragnaros. Ragnaros takes the spot of a Chillwind Yeti. Actually, right now, the budget deck has a little bit of a problem. Like, sometimes I draw both Chillwind Yetis and both Water Elementals in the start, and it really sucks because that's too many 4-drops, so it cuts one of those. One of the things I might consider changing in the non-budget deck is getting rid of the Arcane Missiles for the 2 Arcane Explosions also, since the theory has not changed there. Mm-hmm. And finally, you got the Nat Pig on Blood Mage Thalnos. The Thalnos plus the Arcane Explosion I can only imagine to be awesome. One of the weaknesses of the Mage is your inability to area of effect in the early game. And
yeah. I think for a Thalnos while you were... Explosion. For a while, were you running Pyromancer?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. So talk to me about why you took that out versus, you know, I guess using Arcane Missile, Arcane Explosion for more of that type of purpose.
Turns out that Sun Fury Protector is really important. So there's just so many 2-drops that are good. The Frostbolts seem almost necessary, so the Imani Berserkers. Mm-hmm. And I actually think it's a mistake to run only one Sun Fury Protector on this deck to the right. It should probably be two. And then you have the Nat Pagel and Blood Mage Thalnos. So if you're doing that, then you can't fit in the Wild Pyromancers. So that's pretty tough, especially since I've also added an Arcane Explosion as 2s now. So the 2 slot is really heavy.
Okay.
It's still in development, also.
Yeah. Wasn't Antoninus at some point in this deck? Or no?
Yep. In fact, Gadgetzan Auctioneer was at some point in this deck as well. And okay. The problem with both Gadgetzan and Antoninus is the only low-cost spells you have is Missiles and Frostbolt.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult. So I would argue that the Auctioneer, as I learned, turns out to not be good. As well as Antoninus.
Strife, thoughts on either of the decks?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like that style of Mage. Like, that's one of the play styles that I actually really enjoy. And I think that a Mage deck like that, it's actually, like, relatively, like, solid. Like, it's actually playable against everything. But I feel like it doesn't really have, like, really great matchups. It's more like just every matchup is, like, decent. And I feel that it might even be, like, every matchup is maybe just, like, 48%. So... you know, it's a really solid deck, but I'm not sure, like, if it really is favored, like, the deck is really favored against, like, many of the other decks either, even though it's, like, playable against everything. But I really do enjoy the play style of it. Like, I've tried to play, like, a Mage deck, like, those kind of Mage decks, like, kind of, I guess, Mage Control for a long time. And if I can figure out what I really like, I'll be... playing it a lot in the future as well.
So Trump, your comments on there not being a really great matchup for this, do you think there is, like, do you think this Mage deck just trumps over another deck right now? Trump style.
I actually agree with Strifecrow's assessment, and this is meant to be a generalist deck, very similar to the Druid Ancient Watcher deck. I think the Druid Ancient Watcher deck is a good example of a deck that's generally good against everything and doesn't have any awful matchups, and that's what this Mage deck is trying to do as well. And we can argue about the percentage points of how successful it is, and I will...
Oh, did we lose him?
We lost him.
Oh, there we go. we can't really... I think we're losing Trump here. Trump, you there?
Hello?
Oh, there you go. We can hear you, but it's... Cam's frozen again. We kind of lost the last probably couple sentences you said there, where you'd argue that... You were talking about Strife and the percentages and stuff.
Okay, so we can argue about the percentages. I'd argue that this is... even though it's in its infancy, it can compete with that Strifecrow, Druid, Ancient Watcher style of thought, where it's good against most decks, and with a bit of refinement, it... is probably a suitable, like, counter option than the Druid.
Okay.
Like, it doesn't counter the Druid, it's just, it's very similar to the Ancient Watcher Druid style. is what I'm saying.
Just really solid, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good starter or possibly, I guess, an anchor deck type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I really like it because there's a lot of playability of it. Like, it's, you know, you run into a lot of different situations where you can play in different ways. Like, it doesn't always just do the same thing all the time. Like, as any mage, you can go into kind of burn style, but you can also, it's like also a control deck where, you know, you can just switch modes a lot and make good decisions on, you know, when you should start going for their face.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Well, it's kind of cool to see Sylvanas in it. I don't see Sylvanas that much anymore. So, how is Sylvanas working for you in the deck?
Well, I've been practicing the left deck more, surprisingly. Sylvanas, I think, is reasonable here. It has extra value because you can fireball your Sylvanas, and that's not actually a joke.
Yep, you can do that.
I think Sylvanas is generally solid enough to include in this control type of deck.
Okay. Good stuff.
Strifecrow disagrees because he doesn't have it in his druid deck, but I think it's a close call.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, it's, if you do get like the death rattle, it's just always going to be efficient, I think. It's just a lot of times you don't get the death rattle, so.
It's just amazing. It's amazing how just one mana, or actually, okay, so how much of it not having Sylvanas in so many of the current decks is the extra mana versus just the meta game changing?
It's completely because of the extra mana. Like, if it was 5 mana, it'd still be in every deck. I mean,
yeah.
Okay.
Paying 1 mana more for a card is almost equivalent of like discarding a card every time you play it. Like, if you think about the difference between Ogre Magi and Azure Drake, it's the same card except you draw the card with the Drake. You know, like the way that the cards are budgeted in Hearthstone, every time you add a mana, it's like basically you can either think of it as drawing a card or discarding a card as an additional effect. You know, like as one option. So. If you think about like just having to discard a card every time you play Sylvanas compared to the old one, it's pretty big.
By that logic, Strife, isn't Wild Growth like drawing 8 cards? If you cast it on turn 2.
I mean, it kind of similar. It's only if you actually can spend all your mana like every turn, you know. But also, the card doesn't do anything else. So, I mean, I guess it'd only be 7, but it'd be really slow.
Right,
Yeah.
Because the actual card, it doesn't actually have an effect like Azure Drake or something. But I guess you can compare it to like Arcane Intellect for that. Like, it doesn't have another effect. I mean, that was kind of an exaggeration because of how the cards are budgeted. It's actually every 1.5 mana is generally a card, not every one. That's why people don't usually use Ogre Magi, and they use Azure Drake, so it's not really a fair comparison.
Yeah.
But it is pretty, from what I noticed, it's around, if you pay 1.5 mana, you can draw a card, basically.
Yeah.
And people use the card.
All right, well, kind of doing a time check here. I wanted to still keep, at least reserve some time for some of the questions on the Reddit thread. So why don't we switch over to that? I'm gonna take like a 30-second break here, and then we'll come back with questions, so we can fix Trump's cam here. So we'll be right back, guys. Give us one sec. So we just got the cams fixed there, and why don't we ask a few questions here? And those of you that didn't get a chance to get your questions in, next week hopefully you'll be able to get your questions. But the way we usually do it is you post your questions on this Reddit thread. I always post a Reddit thread each and every day we have Value Town, and what you do is you just put your question in the comments, or you upvote your favorite question so that we'll ask it on the show. And we always sort by the top questions, and then we just kind of read them off. So, all right. So Zio Dreiger asks, Trump, playing, I guess, your free mage, have you learned anything new that you didn't know before?
Well, yeah, I have learned a few things. So I've learned that the mage's weakness is to these really fast Murloc rush decks, as well as the Warlock aggro, the Paladin aggro, whatnot. At least the first incarnation I had. That's why I've recently added the Arcane Explosions, which might still not be enough. But basically, the Mage class, probably why it hasn't been as popular, is because unlike the Shaman or the Druid or the Paladin, it has no early game, or I should say it has no mid-game mass AoE. So
okay,
that's a problem. So hopefully Arcane Explosion solves that. And also, playing a Mage budget deck in particular, it's sort of useful to train because it makes me practice my greediness more, since when you're playing a budget deck, you have to really make use of every single part of your cards, so you can't just like polymorph something that's... You can't polymorph like Druid of the Claw, for example. You have to polymorph something better than that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You like to play greedy anyways, let's be honest.
Yeah, so that's why the Mage deck is right up my alley. Also, it's really good to use the hero ability to Fire Blast something random, like instead of the face, even if it seems like it won't matter at all, it often does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Zyan asks, when working on a constructed deck while climbing the ladder, do you find it wise to make adjustments based on what you're seeing at the time, or wait a day or two, or a different amount of time, and then make any major adjustments? I feel like when climbing ladder, it can be difficult sometimes to tell the difference between a meta shift as I rank up and a streak of unlucky games. I'm unsure when it is appropriate to start changing up decks. It's the same thing, basically. So, Strife, I'll let you answer this one.
I usually start changing decks based on if I can like realize like the weaknesses of them or make improvements.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't really look at like the metagame that much, as far as you know. I guess I do like
you have to know, take it in consideration, you know,
what the metagame is, right? But most of the changes are trying to like tune the deck to just be better in general, you know, instead of tuning it to beat the metagame more. I guess the metagame thing is more like when you initially make the deck, like you make adjustments based on it, and as you kind of refine it more, you kind of just make like better decisions on what cards you want to include.
So when it comes to, I mean, so it's not result oriented at all. I mean, it has to be result oriented, right? I mean,
it can change so often depending on who you play that day, even. So
yeah,
it's kind of weird to make too many changes based on the meta, like what you're running into ladder that day.
Yeah.
But I think you should have a general idea in the long run of what the most popular decks are and what the strongest decks are, so you can kind of make adjustments like that.
Okay. Trump, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, Strife and I sort of have the same mentality from what I've heard over the last, that you want your deck to just be generally good against everything, and I think that's the right mentality for ladder, certainly.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you will face everything. So if you come to realize that your deck, through continued playing, is weak against a common type of deck, then I would recommend considering it. But if you just lose 5 in a row, I would say that's no need to panic.
Yeah.
It happens. It's variance. I've lost 5 in a row. It sucks, but you just have to believe
it's
in your deck.
For the game, yeah.
And then at a certain point, you have to stop believing in your deck and making changes. And it's hard to say exactly when that point is,
mm-hmm.
but that just requires experience and having nerves of steel.
Yeah. So I guess to sum it up, definitely wait a few days or wait X number of games. Maybe X number of games against each class, I think, would probably be a decent sample to figure out if you need to change it or not. Generally speaking, again, like Trump said, sometimes you can kind of get a feel for what things are doing and what might just be inherently wrong in your deck. So, see, next up we got Skip to my Lou. What is the best way to get involved in the competitive scene? I wonder if he's talking about organization or is he talking about like as a player? I think as a player, you should just play tournaments. There's like a lot of tournaments, a lot of things that anybody can sign up for right now, like the Mana Grinds and the, Mana Grinds, the Liquid Hearth Opens. I think even NESL, right? National ESL is having some non King of the Hill events too that you can. I think anybody can sign up for too. So definitely just get into that. Play ladder, of course. And if you're talking about organizational standpoint, I think just try to get a, like, your own little mini tournament going. And I know there have been a few Reddit threads where people have been had the idea of just trying to put together their own and what the best way to do that is. Just do something like that. I mean, it doesn't take... It is kind of hard, honestly, without the OBS mode to actually do it at this point. But it's still not impossible. You can still use people's streams and that sort of thing as long as you get permission. I think those are probably the best things. Okay, we'll take maybe one or two here. Tantrum Wright asks, when they nerfed Novice Engineer, I believe Trump said something like, card for zero mana that simply reads draw a card would be way OP. Can you explain why, how this is, and do the other guys agree? So Trump, you want to explain that?
Yeah, sure. So it's OP for two reasons. One, it's an automatic add into every deck because at some point there are some cards that are worse than your other cards. So you can play with a 28 card deck. If you could do that, you would, because you draw your better cards. Second of all, it would be insane in a Miracle Rogue deck because you just get a free spell. And then your Edwin Van Cleef gets a +2/+2, or your
it's true.
All your cards combo for free. Yeah,
it's like a zero mana Arcane Intellect.
I.e. preparation. Yeah, exactly. I guess it's just mostly
you know, a lot of your curves are approaching the cutoff of 30. It's just that if you add that card to the game, it just means that Hearthstone is a game where you can have from 28 to 30 cards instead of 30 card decks, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can effectively make a 28 card deck.
Yeah.
By putting that. And it just replaces itself into another card.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trump and Kiri explained it pretty well to me the day we were talking about tracking. I think tracking is kind of similar to why people think. I think for knee jerk reactions to think like tracking, I'm going to be losing two cards, so it's actually bad. But I think the whole thinning your deck and increases the quality level of the deck, the cards remaining. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's pretty much kind of how it works too. So tracking doesn't really kick, like the disadvantages of tracking don't really kick in unless you draw out your deck, right? And you get to like the 29th and 30th card.
The real disadvantage of tracking is the cost of mana to
be. Oh, that too. It's a one mana too. Okay, how about one more? Okay. EBBV asks, how much luck versus skill do you guys think is involved in getting 12 wins in Arena? It seems to me getting to 7 is possible as long as your deck isn't horrible, but getting to 12 necessitates a strong deck and dodging opponents with really insane decks. Do you need luck on your side? What do you guys think? Trump, you're our Arena expert here. I'll let you take this one.
I'd like to answer second on this one.
Okay.
Since I need to calculate some stats.
Okay, Strife, what do you think? It's been a while.
I think you can get a very high amount of wins, an absurd percentage of the time. But just like, if you're saying, you know, luck, there's clearly some luck because nobody can go 12 wins 100% of the time. You know, it just depends how you run. I think that depending on really how you want to define consistently your luck, because it is possible to get 12 wins, like, very often, I think. I mean, I don't play a lot of Arena anymore, so I've only played 2 Arenas since they changed it to 12. I think I went 12-1 and then 9 another, but or something like that. But I actually played a fair amount of Arena when it was 9 wins, I believe. And I believe I went 9 wins over 75% of the time.
Wow.
And it was like over, I think my stats were like 27 wins, like 9 wins and like, you know, whatever. I think it was like 6 or 7, yeah. Like not 9 wins. It's much harder at 12, so I don't know what it'd be.
75 sounds outrageous to me. I don't know. Is that right?
Wow. That's really good.
I calculated.
True.
That's, wow. The winning percentages in general are like 70%, so 75%. So that's crazy if you're getting 9 like that. You know, right now with a 12, obviously adding 3 more wins to it is definitely harder. And they I think they changed the heuristic too, is how they the matchup heuristic, where I think we've talked about on the show in the past, where it's like at 9 or 10 wins, they start putting you against other people with 9 or 10 wins, right? Which is,
if it gets harder, yeah, it's like exponentially harder to go.
And now there's more people too. It's open beta. There's probably like, shoot, 4 or 5 times. I don't know how many times more, but a ton more people. So, ton more really great decks out there too. But Trump, you finished looking at those stats? You can report to us some stats here.
So I agree that there's, oh man. So it's skill. There's skill to get to 12 wins in Arena, certainly. Like there's some people where it would be astronomically low to do so, and as you get better, you actually have a chance to do so. Even for me, I only have about a 15%-ish chance of getting to 12 wins.
15's pretty darn good to me. Sounds pretty
good.
Yeah, it's
pretty good.
Yeah, 12 wins should be like way harder than 9. Like it should be, because you're already getting to 9 most of the time with already like 2 losses, like 9-2 and stuff. So going to 12, especially if your players are actually getting harder, you know, it's just way harder.
Yeah. So I guess to answer the question, Trump, like, would you say just it is a lot to do with luck, or?
So ultimately, the entire game of Hearthstone has some foundation in luck. So it's really hard to quantify something. All I can say is that over the long run, your skill will outweigh the luck, because luck is almost by definition a short-term thing. And skill is like over time, your luck evens out because of the law of large numbers from stats.
Yes.
So basically, the skill is in getting as high a win rate as possible. That's all.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, the skill gives you just a higher probability of, you're just your higher probability of winning, right? So if you're much, even if somebody has a greater, like if I went into the arena with Trump with an incredible deck, you know, he's still, his winning percentage is still going to be pretty darn good, relatively speaking. So, so anyway, so the skill ends up mattering a lot in the end. All right, I think that's going to be it. I think that's going to be pretty much just in time for Fight Night, guys. So I figured we would wrap the show just in time for that so that you guys can switch over and watch. But Strife, amazing, man. I'd love having you on, man. It's always a pleasure having you on.
It's fun.
Got to do it again soon. But you want to do some shout-outs? Thank yous?
No shout-outs.
Yeah, no
shout-outs. I never know what to say for them.
You were on EG at one point. You don't have a shout-out? Really?
Yeah, but yeah, there were sponsors for that. That's true.
Okay. Well, if you haven't been watching the show, we have a legacy of just crazy shout-outs. So, so continuing that trend, Trump, any shout-outs you want to do?
Yeah, I'll shout-out to Razor. In fact, on this weekend, I think I'm going to make it Sunday, I'm going to be giving away like a bunch of Razor swag on my stream.
Yeah.
Keyboards, mice, headsets, mouse pads, the whole shebang. To be announced on my stream later.
Awesome. Okay, I forgot that I was going to do this too. But so my shout-outs, big shout-outs obviously both of you guys for doing the show with me today. Always a pleasure, always fun, always learn stuff. And wanted to ask you guys, the viewers, what size of shirt you wear so I can figure out like what distribution we can get these Value Town shirts for you guys. So go to the straw poll, go ahead and vote, and I can get a sense at least of how we should break it up. Small, medium, large, extra large, extra, extra large, you know, that sort of thing. So let me know, and VODs will be available on for the show on youtube.com/TMAV shortly after. And all the past shows, too, you can find there if you missed any of them. Deck Wars tomorrow, Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be Savitz versus Reynard. Going to be good stuff, some really good games there. So I can't excited to show you guys, and I think that's it. You can follow us on Twitter, @StrifeCrow, @TrumpSC, and @ChamManV. And follow this channel if you enjoyed the show or you know, just any of the shows I do. It's the best way to get notified whenever we go live. And that's going to be it for Value Town this week. So for StrifeCrow, Trump, and ChamManV, we'll see you next time. Later.